from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Tuesday, everybody. We have another very, very full show for you. Coming up after Heather's newscast at 9:30, we are going to talk to Chris Sullivan about what is happening with the homeless encampments near I-5 and other freeways around the state. And then coming up at 9:47. The question is laughter contagious? We're going to have fun with that a little later this hour. As always, we want to connect with you. Our state roofing text line is 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO.
Time to give the people what they want. Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
Minimum wage in Washington is going to be the highest of any state in the country next year. It's going up by $1.25 in January to $15.74 an hour. An Axios analysis found that Washington's minimum wage is going to be even higher than California's, which is going to go to $15.50 an hour. And it's only Washington, D.C. at $16.10 an hour that has a higher minimum wage. And why is our state ahead of the pack? You might not remember this, but in 2016, Washington voters approved an initiative that requires the state to adjust the minimum wage every year based on changes to the Consumer Price Index. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics says prices went up by 9% in the Seattle area, exceeding the national inflation rate of 8.3%. So again, in January of 2023, our state minimum wage will be $15.74 an hour.
Well, this is good news that it is tied to inflation. I'm looking forward to the day that some of our senior citizens that are on fixed incomes, their increases will be tied to, or Social Security being tied to inflation. This is good news, and it's because of what was passed here in 2016 is the reason why it has been tied to inflation. So good news. But it's interesting because as you start to go down the rabbit hole of minimum wage, and if you ever have a chance, and we don't have time right now, when you go into the history of where minimum wage started and why it started, the same arguments that people used back then to not, because they did not want minimum wage, are the same arguments that are being used today to prevent minimum wages from being higher. There's always, well, what about the owners of the businesses? Back then it was, what about those that own the farms? The same arguments. It's interesting. Another thing I wanted to say is right now, Ursula, there are currently 20 states. There's 20 states in the United States of America right now that do not pay a higher minimum wage than the federally minimum wage at $7.25. There's still 20 states that just play right there at $7.25. There are 16 states in the country right now, most of them being in the South, that still pay the federal subminimum wage, you know, the one, the federal tipped minimum wage of $2.13 per hour. And Washington is one of those that abolished that. That does not happen. So, again, I do have good news for that. I'm looking forward to it being higher. But the state of Washington is the leader in the United States.
Yes. And I will point out also that Seattle actually has a higher minimum wage already, $17.27 per hour. And SeaTac is $17.54 an hour. Okay. That all said, And you mentioned some of the same arguments, though. I mean, and even though, yes, we have the highest minimum wage, we also have more companies that are practically begging for employees. So at the end of July, the state recorded 213,000 job openings, which the Seattle Times reports was one of the highest month-to-month increases in the country. Again, so we have tons of jobs available. And now you would think that's good news. And maybe we would get a break on inflation, but our state's chief economist says, no, that's not the case. With record unemployment at 3.7% right now,
right,
and all these jobs available, businesses basically will have to pay even more to get people to work for them, right?
Right.
So what does that generally mean? If a business has to pay more for their employees,
what does that mean?
Generally, that also means they're going to continue to raise prices so that they can afford those higher wages. Most business owners are going to want to keep their profit margins the same, so they are going to pass the buck literally to us.
No, you're right. And that's the thing about higher wages, right? Like right now, if you want to talk about one of the biggest reasons for turnover at a job is because workers are going to look for better pay. Yeah. You show me a place that has less turnover, it is a place that they pay higher wages. So I get it. It is the ping pong back and forth. We want to say, hey, a lot of these workers, they don't want to work. And then if we raise the prices up, the pay, then we, the business owner, have to raise the prices. And then that is going to go on you, the consumer. Well, everything's high right now.
Yeah. Well, and what the economists are saying is don't expect it to go any lower just because wages are going to go up. And in fact, it's going to add to inflation. And remember, you were talking about the turnover or the big turnover at companies.
Yeah.
So the great resignation that was happening during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Well, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, again, points out that after hitting a peak in March, fewer workers are actually leaving their jobs now in Washington. So the quit rate, this is what they look at the end of July was 2.2%. That was actually down from June, and that's one of the lowest quit rates in the country. So there was a point in time where people were quitting all the time, and they called it the Great Resignation, but now people are being much more cautious.
Yeah.
So it's good news to see that minimum wage is going up, but also understand that also means we're going to be in this inflationary time for a while. Businesses in Seattle's University District are forming a coalition to hopefully bring a sense of safety back to the community. This comes after four students were shot over the weekend outside a popular bar.
A lot of lights hanging, you know, like we're going to try putting more lights in. I'm going to try to see if we can get some more cameras, but we're going to work to make it better.
Seattle police tell Cairo 7 TV two men got into a fight before those shots rang out on Saturday night. The suspects have not been found. The students who were shot are expected to fully recover, thankfully. The U District is one of those areas in the city that has also seen a lot of vandalism recently. And later this morning, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell and other leaders are going to be announcing the launch of this storefront repair fund to support small businesses. And the only thing that we know right now is the fund is going to leverage nearly $2 million of federal money to repair or reimburse businesses that have been damaged by vandals.
Investment back into the communities are very important, which is for so many years we saw certain communities have divestment into those communities, hence the reason why they stayed looking the way that they did. Let me repeat again. Investment into communities is an amazing thing. I love what Bruce Harrell is doing for the city. I'm looking forward to that press conference and the discussion centered around that. But I think this is amazing for the businesses to be able to get the upkeep, because let's be real, it is an eyesore when you come into the communities and you see some of these businesses that have been vandalized and things like that. So I'm super excited about that.
Okay. So my initial reaction is great idea to put okay, so first of all, with the businesses there, I am particularly interested in U District. It's a place where I try to frequent. I try to support the small business owners. I go there probably multiple times a week. The great restaurants all along the Ave. But it has seen its better days. It is run down. It is, you can see whether it's drug dealing, the graffiti all over the place. I mean, and while the business owners say, hey, we're going to put in more lights, we're going to put in more security cameras, I mean, they've done stuff like this before in that specific area where they widen the streets, widen the sidewalks, try to make it more friendly. You have to address other things, including I don't see enough police patrols. And I get it. We don't have enough police in the city. But again, I mean, what's happening with the drug dealing and the drug addicted and the mentally ill people who are hanging around the sidewalks, making it difficult for businesses? There are many businesses that have shut down. I think we need more police officers patrolling that area. I also think when you call this a public health crisis, UW President Anna Marie Cauchy was calling this the gun violence a public health crisis. Well, what are we not doing?
addressing our gun problem that we have. For some reason, every time we bring up guns, I'm going to get all kinds of text messages telling me I'm trying to take away your guns. Why is it that we have such a gun problem? Why is it that we won't address our gun issues? Why is it that every single time we hear people use their talking points of crime, crime, and stop the violence, and we need to stop the shootings, but yet at the same time, we don't want to address our gun problem?
Right. Exactly. So we can put all the lights there. We can put all the cops there. We can put all the, you know, do everything. But you still get people who shouldn't have guns with guns thinking that the only way to resolve a problem, a bar brawl, now ends up being, you know, ending in gunfire in the middle of a crowded university. I'm sorry, but you can call it a world-class university, but I know if I'm a parent wondering where my kids should go, I just had my son's girlfriend. She was visiting from Montreal, and she was remarking last night. She said, I couldn't even imagine. She's still in college. She said, I couldn't even imagine something like this happening on our campus. It just wouldn't. It doesn't.
up there in Montreal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that. Well, a lot of people say that when they come to this country and talk about that. My buddy who grew up in Korea, in South Korea, talks about that all the time. When he first got to the States, he was like, wow, never knew that even existed over there.
So you can, you know, try to throw all these things at it, but you also have to address the gun violence. What exactly that looks like? Mm-hmm. I mean, we at least have to come to some agreement that some measures need to be put in place. Yeah. A boy from Grays Harbor is now accused of using Aberdeen High School's TikTok account to post cryptic threats about a shooting. And one of his posts warned that he was going to be bringing a gun to school on Monday. The other one warned students not to come to campus. And Aberdeen police say they worked with TikTok. They also worked with the district to find out who was behind this. That young suspect is now in custody, apparently doesn't go to the school, and it's not clear how he got access to that account.
Well, I hope Aberdeen High School lets everybody know how in the world this young man got a hold of the high school TikTok and sent these messages. You know, I don't know if I asked this yesterday, but I guess I'm going to ask again. When you were in high school or in school, did the fire alarm ever get pulled, Ursula, when you were in school?
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
We would have fire drills, and then there are also false fire alarms.
The false alarms,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then usually, you know, I'm not saying I never did it. I know people that did. They didn't want to take a test or something like that, so it came down to that. I'm just wondering, are we going to, and by the way, we have to take every single threat really serious. I just wonder if we're going to start seeing more of these pranks in equivalent to the back in the day, the high school fire alarm deal.
We're already seeing too many of, you know, and you can't call these pranks, because these pranks are so disruptive given what we know can happen if you don't pay attention.
Sure.
And so in the case of what happened in Grays Harbor, you have to take them seriously. And this kid needs to face serious consequences, because I think this goes way beyond a fire drill. Okay, so we have an update on that Sumner City Council member who sent the racist meme from his state email account. The City Council has now voted 4-2 to reprimand Patrick Reed, who sent that offensive meme that read, "If they're in court, they're guilty, especially if they're black or Mexican." In addition to the reprimand, Reed was also removed from all of his Sumner City Council committee assignments. As you know, he cannot be fired from his city council position unless voters initiate a recall. And now, because Reed also works for the Secretary of State's office, they've confirmed to the Seattle Times that they are doing an employee investigation, but that's the extent of it.
Good for you, Sumner. Good for you to take that stance. Like you said, I mean, you can't remove him or fire him from his city council position unless there's an initiation of a recall. But basically, this is Sumner City Council saying, you know what, this is not what represents us in Sumner. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people that live in Sumner that don't like this as well. And you don't need this, and you definitely don't want this. So when I saw this news and the headline about this, I just said it. I just kept it simple. Sumner, good for you to stand against something in that nature.
I'm surprised he hasn't resigned. I know that he apologized on his Facebook page, called it a horribly offensive mistake. Then he tried to blame The fact that he, well, I don't know what's the fact, but this is what he said. He said he did a quick online image search, and then that's somehow popped up, and he didn't mean to send it. I mean, it didn't pass the smell test. But I think, like you, the Sumner City Council did as much as they could do.
Yeah.
They took away most of his power, so he can... Now, how does he still remain effective in office? And it's an embarrassment to the city council.
Can we interview the two people that that didn't vote? Can we?
Yeah, what was the reason behind
it? I would love to interview them. I would love to get their reasons as to, hey, did you not think that that was a bad thing? Do you think that Sumner, is this what represents Sumner? And if you're listening, I would love for you to come on the show and talk about it.
I think it's a pretty simple explanation. I mean, this is not an unknown person in the community. You have relationships between council members. You have people who will naturally say, look, I know this guy. I know his heart. I know his family. I know the consequences for things like this. He's already facing, you know, action potentially from the state and losing his job. We'll see what happens there. But I know this guy. He made a mistake. That's it. I don't see it as an ideological support for his actions necessarily, as maybe a vote of confidence in the man personally.
Well,
now, what will be interesting, though, is the Secretary of State's office, which is now doing this investigation. He did use the state email to send that.
Mm-hmm.
The Secretary of State himself is now in a very close race during this midterm election. So I'm guessing that they'll address it after the election, because you know, no matter what you do, it'll be seen in the light, in the lens of what's coming up. But they do have the ability to make a decision like whether he should be fired or not.
Right.
So
you mentioned why didn't he resign? You know, there's other people that won't resign as well, and because the voters voted them in, and so they're stuck in that job. So some people just love, they just like, you know what, I'm not going to go anywhere. Even though I should resign, I'm just not going to resign.
Yeah.
It happens.
Okay, still ahead, we are going to talk to Chris Sullivan because something is happening with those homeless encampments after so many years, it seems, of inaction. There is something happening when it comes to homeless encampments near freeways. And we'll get the update from Chris coming up next. The G and Ursula Show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And remember that fire under the Ship Canal Bridge last week? It was from a homeless camp near the freeway. And it turns out that camp is now being targeted by the state under a new program that is already showing some positive results. And our transportation expert, Chris Sullivan, has been looking into this, and he joins us now live.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, this is the Right of Way Safety Initiative. Legislature put it out earlier this year to great fanfare, and I think all of us kind of rolled our eyes and was like, great, here we are again, we're going to throw a bunch of money at this, and what are we really going to get out of this? Isn't going to work. What's different this time? Well, a couple months into this thing, and there are some signs of positivity in this. The DOT, with partners from the State Patrol, the Department of Commerce, and I'll explain why they get involved here in a minute, and local agencies have now cleared five of the biggest camps along the I-5 and I-90 corridors, three in Thurston, two here in King, including the one at Fort, you know, Dearborn and I-90 that we've all seen there right along I-5. And what they've done is that before they clean out these areas and get them out of the right of way, they find them housing on the front end. So before they give them the notice that we're going to clean everything out and move you out of here, the people already have a place to go. Unlike a sweep where in the past you would just come in, take their stuff, kick them out, and they'd have nowhere to go. And so what's different here is they now have money, $143 million that the legislature and the governor has approved, of which I think they have $45 million so far, that they have now found places for these people to go. In fact, out of the 98 that they contacted in cleaning these five camps, 77 of them actually took the help.
Wow.
Which is
good.
Really unusual.
That's
it, you know,
percentage.
The MO here has always been generally is people refuse the help. So 77 out of the 98 took them up on it. And a couple of months after these sweeps, 73 of those 77 are still in housing. so they're not on the street anymore. So something is working here, whatever the reason may be. And again, I know it's only a couple of months worth, a very small sample size, but this approach seems to be bearing a little bit of fruit on the front end here, and it may be a model for them to be able to go at this, because we all know no one... It's not safe to have these camps along the freeway, whether for the people who live there or for the people who drive by or take transit or ride their bikes or whatever. And so this approach, at least at first blush, seems to be bearing some fruit.
So one of the biggest differences I've seen is that camp that became so sprawling next to I-5 and I-90, the interchange there.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing had become like an entire village.
Yeah, totally. And a lot of them do that. And that one's been cleaned out, and it stayed clean. They've kept people out of there. And that's what it also takes, is to, once you clean out an area like this, you have to fence it in, find ways to prevent people from getting back in there. But you also, at the same time, have to provide a place for these folks to go. And that's what this new policy from the top down is doing, is it's giving these they before they go, say for instance, look at the Ship Canal place that we talked about last week, had that fire. There's an encampment underneath the Ship Canal on either side of the express lanes right there, one under the south span, one under the north span. The north span caught fire last week, so what they'll do, and they're targeting that now, is they're already sending people in there, volunteers, to build up trust over a little bit of time. Go, listen, this is what we're pitching. This is not your normal thing. We'll find you a place to stay if you'd like to take advantage of this, because eventually we're going to clean this place out. Not today, not tomorrow, but eventually. How can we help you? And they do things like they try to keep couples together. They try to work with people with animals, because we know there are a lot of reasons why people don't want to go to the shelters. Maybe they've got a person that they live with or hang with as of a different sex, and you know they split them up when they send them to shelters, or they have no place for animals. And so they try to work with the needs that they have and find them places where that can be successful.
I heard you mention a fence. And so I know that we're not going to be seeing fences along I-5. So let's just say, Sully, I see you and your people been there homeless for a minute. You feel me? And you up under the bridge. You got that good view, you know? And so I'm waiting for you to clear out. And as soon as you get cleared out, I'm coming to take that spot.
Yeah.
So you know where I'm going with this,
oh,
right?
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be the follow up on the back end to keep that place clear.
Yeah. Wait, even more follow-up, because I know the success that you're talking about the how many 70-something?
77 that took them up on the
took
help.
Took them up. And so they have to have a certain amount of time where they're getting help, and hopefully they don't come out and then come back like a revolving door.
Exactly.
So will they continue? Because I would love to stay on top of this. Like, okay, of those 70-something that you initially that took the help, how many of them are still housed after 6 weeks or after 90 days? And also, what are you going to do about the people? Because as you guys know, when someone moves out, somebody does what?
They move right in.
So how are they going to go ahead and help and sustain that issue?
And again, I think that's something that since they've put such a highlight on this right now with actual numbers, that I think they are tracking. Because as I said, through a couple of months, 73 out of 77 are still housed. Let's see where they are in 6 months. Let's see where they are in 8 months. Let's see where they are in a year to see if that number is consistent and stays that way. But you're right. I mean, that the thing that I'm getting out of this, there's a lot more backup follow end on this, back end follow up to help them, because obviously now we're talking about significant amounts of dollars.
Yes.
Not that we weren't before in Seattle with the right amount of money thrown at this thing, but $143 million from the state to these agencies, and not just here. I mean, they're talking about they've been working in Thurston and King and Snohomish, Pierce, and in Spokane as well to try to work on this.
So how are they deciding which ones are the ones they're going to tackle first?
Well,
I mean, obviously the I-90, I-5 one, that was gigantic. And it seemed to be, it needed to be a priority.
Yeah, they it goes kind of by the safety issue of like how close they are in proximity to a freeway or to an unsafe condition for them and for the public at large. So they kind of, the criteria is a little flexible, and they kind of work through what they, I mean, like the ones they cleared in Olympia were, I mean, even if it's hard to imagine, they were probably bigger than the one under I-5 in Dearborn. Some of the ones there along I-5 that are hidden through some of the trees in there. Holly and I once stopped off, got off on one of the freeways there, grabbed some fast food. I mean, it was populated more than any of the one I'd seen in Seattle. So they go by how many people they can help, how many people they could move. And again, probably the safety is the number one issue when it comes to getting these folks out of those areas, because I mean, it just doesn't mix for people living when people are going 75, 80 next door, you know, feet away, and that's where they're living.
Yeah. I'm already seeing text messages just to piggyback on what G was saying, where people are saying, well, now Seattle's going to continue its reputation of being a place for, hey, come on over here, because if you're living out on the street, you'll get free housing.
Well, it's not just Seattle. Again, this is a statewide program targeting 5 counties. The goal is to make this statewide, if they get more funding from the legislature going forward, so that it's not just come to Seattle. It's if you happen to have a homeless camp in Clark County, which there's a big one there along I-5, and there's another one by 205 there in the Vancouver area. You know, maybe they'll have the money to do that there. They do it in Kittitas County, where you may not see it as much, but they're still there. You go to Spokane County. I'm not sure when was the last time you've been into downtown Spokane. I've been in there a couple times. I was there last week, and there's large populations there too. And of course, they're dealing with their own issue with Camp Hope, which you guys have probably talked about, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because that's technically off I-5, but it's part of this program as well. So, I mean, it's not just about Seattle. It's about cleaning this up statewide, getting the homeless Finally. Camps away from the freeways, and not just kicking them out, but finding a place on the back end where they can live, and let's see if they can stay living. Right now, just minimal signs showing positivity. That's why I want, yes. This is always so negative, and yes. There's never any yes. follow-up on exactly. the backside yes. to just kind of track this and any signs of positivity after the years of doing nothing or yes. things that throwing money at stuff that doesn't work. I think that's worth highlighting.
Yes, I have bugged you with this question for years.
Yeah, you have.
Yes, and so it's great to hear some positivity.
Yeah, I mean, just yes. little slivers. I mean, yes. any little bit helps. We got to get this going down yes. the road a little bit. Yes.
Hey, Sully.
Yeah.
With rent increasing in Seattle 32% in the last 3 years, have you been able to do some research on how many more people are becoming homeless every single day? Just kidding with you.
I'll do what I can.
I'm just kidding.
I don't have any receipts on that yet.
I just love to use the analogy. You know, we got folks throwing babies in the water, and then you got folks down the way just keep pulling the babies out. Why did the baby keep getting in the water?
I know. It's bigger issues. I'm just one man, G.
No, seriously. You did a great job on covering this. Thank you, sir.
All right, and I'll stay on it too.
Coming up next, we need to talk. Is laughter contagious? Is it? Well, we're gonna play some clip for you and tell you what a French TV show is doing over there. It's the G and Ursa Show. It is the G and Ursa Show. Happy Tuesday to everybody. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we will be talking about something that Seattle police recruits are asked to do. So we'll share that with you at 10 o'clock. Right now, we need to talk about laughter. And question for you, is laughter contagious? Well, you're going to have to help me out here because my computer just messed up, Ursula. A clip of a French TV show is going viral for hosting a panel of guests each with an unusual laugh.
Okay, check this out. Okay, what the heck? Okay, that is not an air horn, even though that's what it sounds like. It is a real live human being, and that is that person's actual laugh. And if you think that is bad, imagine letting this laugh rip at a cocktail party. Oh my gosh, and I thought mine was bad. Once a couple of the guests started laughing, everybody started laughing. Chef, you had to put in here again. These are real normal. Okay, that one that sounds like a farm animal. No,
they all sound like farm animals. It sounds like a menagerie going on there, like the Barnum and Bailey circus tent.
The laughs right here, like these are some hilarious laughs. But let me just go ahead and get to the real reason why we wanted to do this. Since we've been doing the show, Ursula, and those that know you, let's be real. Everybody loves your laugh. You have
not everybody.
You have the contagious laugh. Now, if you know someone in your friend group and in your family that, like, when they laugh, for some reason, it makes the whole, whatever it was, a joke or a situation or a circumstance at that time, it makes it even more funny. Ursula has that effect on the day. The laughs.
Okay, it's only because it's such a loud and annoying laugh. I wish I had a melodic laugh. I actually told you today I like your laugh.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
I just want to say, in all my years of living, you're the first person to ever tell me that they like my laugh. So I don't know about that, Ursula.
Okay. For many years, I would actually turn off the mic and I would laugh off the air because I didn't want people driving off the road hearing my laugh. And then my sister used to ask me, like, why do you... She's called it the Dick Dastardly laugh. Do you remember that comic, the cartoon, where it was like a little snicker?
Oh, yeah.
Because
I
try to suppress my laugh. She's like, why do you sound like the...
That was a good invitation. I didn't know who you're talking about. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, I know
right
a lot
now.
Of people will know who I'm talking about. But, I mean, is it contagious? Absolutely. And to me, laughter is a stress relief. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's hereditary because my sisters and I all laugh the same, just to varying degrees of volume. And it's like I can't get enough out that I will end up like slapping people.
There it is.
There it is right there.
It's almost as if I can't get enough out and then I end up like getting kind of physical about it.
Right.
Don't tell Ursula jokes or you could get assaulted. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah, the slapping of the table. And I mean, you know, there's some families, right, that's pretty cool that really laugh a lot and really get into it.
Yes.
And
our family is one.
I'd say you're definitely relieve a lot of stress by laughing. I know there's a lot of people that don't laugh enough. Like, man, why are you mad at breakfast, fam? Like, why are you so mad all
okay,
the
gonna,
time?
We're gonna hit a few more.
Okay.
Okay, hang on.
These are the short versions, just in case, you know, you need those for later in the show and G makes an excellent point.
Okay, I know my laugh is bad, though, too, because oftentimes I'll hear from people upstairs and they say, oh, my God, I knew it was you. I heard you from upstairs. And I know they're telling me you're way too loud.
Now,
and then when people now have to come back to the office and now they have to deal with my laughter.
Yeah. So just help me. What's up with the snorting that happens?
Okay, I don't do that.
But you know, some people that just get those in. I'm like, well, how did you do that? Like, what happened for you to make that noise? Hey, coming up at 10 o'clock, what's new? Well, the Seattle Police recruits. They're going to have to do something, possibly. And I want to see, and we're going to see what you think about that. We'll share that with you next. Gene Ursula.